Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 30th of November. And we have the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week, edited by Bill Argles, Ken Clemenson and Irene Dowding. And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Jane Harding.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Hello.
So, now we will start with What's On. On Wednesday, the 5th of December, there's an illustrated talk on A Victorian Christmas, a Celebration, at St John's House, the Broadway in Winchester, at 2:30 p.m. This is for the Winchester National Trust Association, but visitors are welcome with a charge of £4. On Friday, the 7th of December, the London Community Gospel Choir is coming to the Middlebrook Centre. Doors open 7 p.m. To book tickets at £10, phone 01962 840 800. That's 01962 840 800. Also on Friday, the 7th of December, Gervase Finn, the writer of many entertaining books on schools in Yorkshire, will be speaking at the Winchester Discovery Centre at 7:30 p.m. Tickets here cost £17.50. And the box office number for the Discovery Centre is 01962 873603. That's 01962 873603. The Chesil Theatre Company is performing Love's Labour's Lost from tomorrow, Saturday the 1st, to the 8th of December at the Chesil Theatre, Chesil Street, Winchester. Performances start at 7:45 p.m. And you can ring the ticket agent if you wish to get tickets on 0844 8700 887. That's 0844 8700 887. And finally, a look forward to the 14th of December at 7 p.m. when Winchester Cathedral is hosting the Lord Lieutenant's Christmas Concert with popular Christmas carols and readings presented by Alan Titchmarsh and featuring the Cathedral Choir. Tickets cost from £12.50 to £30 and are available by phone on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Now we have the Lighting Up Time announcement. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 30th of November at 7:47 a.m. and begins at 4:03 p.m. On Wednesday, the 5th of December, it ends at 7:53 a.m. and begins at 4 p.m. precisely. Now we come to the Hampshire Chronicle. And the main headlines this week are Row Cooking Over Celebrity Chef's Venture, Prepare for Barton Farm Number 2, says protester, and Gloves Off in the Christmas Market Stakes. So we'll go over to Jane, please, for the story behind the first headline.
And the first headline, appropriately, is Row Cooking Over Celebrity Chef's Venture, Wrong Location for New City Restaurant. Opposition is simmering to plans to convert a historic Winchester Mill into a restaurant for celebrity chef and TV presenter Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall. An invitation-only public meeting on Monday night was attended by around 50 people who heard how Abbey Mill, on Colebrook Street, could be converted into a base for River Cottage, canteen and deli. Many of the people at the Guildhall were strongly opposed to the plans, fearing it will bring noise pollution and traffic congestion onto the quiet street. Katie Warnes of Colebrook Street said, "I think it's fair to say we are all fairly horrified. It would be slap bang in the middle of a residential street. We have noise from the car park already. But the problem is not one thing in isolation. It's a combination. Another concern is a fire risk with all the listed buildings around. It's difficult enough to get down this road as it is, but with the extra cars, it will be impossible and block off emergency access. Nobody wants to see it fall into disrepair, and I understand the council needs to maximise its opportunities to make money, but it's not an appropriate location. We don't feel the council has made enough effort to try and get somebody to take it in its current office use." Another resident, who asked not to be named, said, "There is a moral hazard over the change of use. If you want it as a restaurant, then River Cottage is as fine as you can get. But can you guarantee it will always be River Cottage? We accept there will be problems with living in a town centre, but this will exacerbate them and make it a permanent problem." Guy Ashton, also of Colebrook Street, added, "There are two sensible outcomes here. Either the council decides a restaurant in Colebrook Street is not an appropriate place, or they say it is, and River Cottage is a great tenant. But there are a number of controls. There needs to be controls over things like the number of deliveries and customers, the times of deliveries, opening hours, outdoor seating, smells, rubbish and noise. But there is local support for the plan. John Holder, who runs Wolvesey View Bed and Breakfast in Colebrook Place, said, "I think it is excellent. It will be a wonderful asset for Winchester. To some extent, I have a motive as I run a B&B. I think Winchester is showing the way how to get out of the horrible economic mess. For people to be trying to stop this is incredible. I am in favour, but they will have to do something about traffic. Perhaps they could treat Colebrook Street like College Street, with a barrier to stop through traffic." And the article is accompanied by a picture of the slightly dilapidated Abbey Mill in Colebrook Street, accompanied by a joyful photograph of Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who wants to convert it into the restaurant.
"Prepare for Barton Farm number two," says protester. "Anti-Barton Farm campaigners have given up their fight to stop 2,000 new homes being built on the farmland on the northern edge of Winchester. Campaigners say they have decided to end their near 15-year battle, with leader Gavin Blackman predicting the development would make inevitable further house building over Wellhouse Lane up to the A34 and Three Maids Hill. Mr. Blackman, chairman of the Save Barton Farm Group, said legal advice on challenging the outline planning permission for 2,000 homes was that it was unlikely to succeed. The costs could be upwards of £50,000, said Mr. Blackman. He said, "We could not raise the funds and there was no guarantee we'd be able to. We wanted to take it forward, but we could not afford to. The feeling now is that Barton Farm is a done deal. The decision now is whether we become Shape Barton Farm rather than Save Barton Farm. I don't want to be part of Shape Barton Farm. I don't care what it will look like. I don't think people are clear on what impact this is going to have. I'm disappointed and perplexed. There is not much more fuss being made about it." On Barton Farm 2, he said, "It will go further. The infrastructure will be there. There is nothing to stop it going further north." Mr. Blackman said he was still interested in national lobbying to alter government policy to encourage more brownfield development. Mike Emmett, development director of Carla Homes, said, "I'm pleased we will now be able to get on and deliver the housing the city desperately needs. Carla expects to undertake a public consultation in January before it submits a detailed planning application in the middle of 2013. Mr. Emmett said he hoped to be building by spring 2014. Green campaigners are meeting this Saturday, December the 1st, to discuss how Barton Farm should be developed. WINAC, that's W-I-N-A-C-C, the City of Winchester Trust and Winchester Friends of the Earth are staging the meeting to talk about how to ensure the scheme is as good as possible. The meeting will be at St Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street from 10:30 a.m. to noon. Only pre-booked members and their official guests will be able to attend. Booking is essential. Email events@winacdoc.org.uk with your name, postcode, phone number, and which of the host organisations you belong to. And there is a small photograph of a group of valiant protesters with their placard saying, Save Barton Farm.
Gloves off in the Christmas market stakes. Goodwill to all men is a phrase somewhat missing in a Christmas market campaign being waged by two cathedral cities this festive season. Business chiefs in Salisbury have put up a poster in Stockbridge Road near Winchester Railway Station highlighting their first festive market. A year after Winchester advertised in the Wiltshire City to attract people there to the ancient capital of England. Meanwhile, the city has again purchased billboard advertising in Salisbury's Castle Street. Belatedly, the Wiltshire county town has started a Christmas market at its cathedral some 6 years after Winchester. Since then, the Winchester Market and Ice Rink has been a massive economic success for city shops, pubs and restaurants. Last year, an estimated 300,000 people visited Winchester, with thousands coming on coach trips from across the country. Chris Turner, the Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, We started it last year when there wasn't a market in Salisbury. They now have a market, a bit late in the day, but they are starting to get their act together. Winchester has also rented some 25 billboards in London, including at Waterloo Station, to lure Londoners to the city. Ian Newman, chairman of Salisbury City Centre Management, said, Last year, the city's business community told us that we needed a Christmas market to help attract more people to the city in the all-important run-up to Christmas. We've listened to them and have pulled out all the stops to bring a market to Salisbury this year. And Professor Turner said he believed that the Christmas phenomenon was a growing market.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices, followed by Christian comment. And there are only four notices of deaths this week. Aves, Nellie Aves of Ropley, aged 86. Camel, Alan Leonard Camel, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 75. Pattison, John Pattison, unexpectedly, aged 85, and Scott, Ian Scott. And now we'll go over to Bobby for Christian comment.
And this week it is offered by Mary Gray, who heads it, But Where is Christ's Kingdom? On Sunday, the Christian year ended with the Feast of Christ the King. Established by Pope Pius XI in 1925, when the Black Shirts were in power in Italy under Mussolini, and Adolf Hitler had just become leader of the Nazi Party in Germany, it offered an antidote to secularism, a way of life which leaves God out of human thinking and living. The feast proclaims that despite dictatorships, economic collapse and false values, Jesus Christ
has inaugurated the reign of God, a kingdom of peace and justice. But is it possible to speak meaningfully of the kingdom of Christ in today's multicultural, multi-faith society, where we talk daily of diminishing numbers of Christians attending church? Across the globe, India's Christians number about 4% of the population. In many Middle Eastern countries, numbers are steadily decreasing to about 2% as emigration due to political conflict prompts a slow bleeding of the Christian population to the US or the West. Whatever happened to the kingdom that Jesus preached? Perhaps this has always been the cry, even when Christendom was at its height. Martin Scorsese's film, The Last Temptation, with no scriptural basis, appears to capture something of the paradox when, in the dying moments of Christ on the cross, he appeared to opt for a pleasant life, marrying Mary of Magdala and raising a family, forgetting the vision of the kingdom he had preached with such passion. Near the end of his life, the film depicts an elderly Jesus calling his former disciples to his deathbed, crawling back through the burning city of Jerusalem. Jesus reaches the site of his crucifixion and begs God to let him fulfill his purpose and to let him be God's son. So Jesus then finds himself once more upon the cross, having overcome the last temptation. Naked and bloody, Jesus cries out in ecstasy as he dies, "It is accomplished." What imaginative fiction this may be, but it jolts us into realizing Christ the King is not the imperial Christ of Christendom, nor the Christ of the conquistadores subjugating the indigenous peoples of Latin America. It is a very human Jesus who preached the kingdom of peace and justice, washed the feet of his followers, broke taboos by touching lepers and the woman with a blood disease. And in our world, when in many places Christianity seems to be shrinking numerically, the challenge is to seek God's kingdom differently, including becoming aware of and revering God's presence in other faiths. It means acting for justice with all people of goodwill, recognizing our shared longing and need of peace.
On now with letters to the editor. And we'll go over to Jane for the first letter, please.
And the first letter from Douglas Patterson, the chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, is headed "Huge Footprint for Trivial Contribution." Sir, Bob Whitmarsh and I are in agreement about the urgent need to close coal-fired power stations, but that does not change the stark fact that EDF's proposed wind farm at Bullington Cross would produce less than 0.5% of Didcot's output, but at twice the price. Its contribution to reducing carbon emissions would be even more trivial. However, its visual footprint would be huge. Average UK energy consumption per person, all energy, not just electricity, is 125 kilowatts per day. To supply just 20 kilowatts per day per person with wind power would require double the current stock of wind turbines across the world. But remember, when the wind drops, turbines still produce nothing. If we are serious about tackling carbon emissions and having a reliable electricity supply, we need a much bigger solution. Fooling around with windmills and areas with low wind speed will achieve next to nothing. It antagonises a significant proportion of the population who care deeply about their landscape and drives people away from the cause of reducing carbon emissions. Mr. Whitmarsh misunderstands my position on subsidies. I have no problem with them in principle, if they achieve the necessary result. When the detail of the recent energy deal within the coalition emerges, we can only hope that it is based on realistic solutions rather than political posturing and vested interests. Like it or not, the world is now awash with gas, thanks to fracking. Gas has half the emissions of coal and has the advantage over wind in that it actually does the job. Converting from coal to gas in the UK would save 55 million tonnes of carbon emissions annually, which dwarfs the dubious savings claimed by the wind industry. We can either ignore this opportunity and continue to fry the planet, or we can use it as a bridge to a cleaner future. And that was Douglas Paterson, Chairman Keep Hampshire Green of Hunton Grange Farm, Sutton Scotney.
The next letter is from Councillor David Stewart, who's the Chair of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel from the Castle, Winchester. He heads it, election over, now the work begins. Sir, decision-making on policing across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has entered a new era following the election of Simon Hayes as the first Police and Crime Commissioner. On behalf of Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, whose role it is to support and scrutinise his work, we look forward to working alongside Mr. Hayes. The election over, the hard work begins and there will be important considerations ahead. It will be the Commissioner's responsibility to make sure there is an early focus on appointing a new Chief Constable, who builds on the success of Alex Marshall to maintain their operational independence and provide ongoing support for frontline policing. Crucial decisions on the policing budget and strategy that a new Chief Constable will be expected to deliver will also be among the Commissioner's new priorities. With the concept of the Police and Crime Commissioner is new to us all, I'd like to provide assurance that mechanisms have been established which will provide an independent checks and balances challenge to the work of the Commissioner. With the wealth of knowledge and experience provided by the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, we can move forward confidently knowing we are in a strong position to support, question and scrutinise police and crime strategy for the future, as is our responsibility to local communities so that they stay safe and secure for years to come. Councillor David Stewart, Chair of Hampshire Police and Crime Panel at the Castle.
And now a letter headed Website Supports Former Patients from Siobhan Hand. Sir, I was a patient of former Ulster dentist Dr. Jonathan Drummond, whose treatment was described as deplorable by the General Dental Council's Professional Conduct Committee. The GDC found Dr. Drummond had, to quote, exposed a number of patients to significant risk of harm. I have set up a website to support other former patients of both Dr. Drummond and Dr. Stephen Fellows, who owned the practice in West Street, New Alsford. If your readers would like to share their experiences, they can email info@baruchinpatients.co.uk. If you remember, the practice was Berukin, B-E-R-U-K-I-N. That's from Siobhan Hand, Main Road, Usselbury.
And this letter from Julia Sanderson is headed Seeing the Light After All This Time. Sir, Arriving here from London nearly 30 years ago, I was used to light pollution and night skies that were permanently starless. Imagine my disappointment to discover that Winchester also suffered so much that the night sky remained blank. But recently, on nights when cloud cover has been little, the stars have been there in all their glory for us to see. Could this be due to the new street lighting the council is in the middle of implementing? I think it might, and I'm grateful. It has finally seen the light, so we can once more enjoy the beauty of the stars, writes Julia Sanderson, Clifton Road, Winchester.
The next correspondent has supplied their name and address, but the letter is not identified. It's headed Wasted Journey to a Closed Library. Sir, I went into Winchester last Friday, one of the prime reasons being to visit the library. But when I got there, it was closed, with signs stating it was due to training. I was amazed and angry that a public service could be closed all day and on one of the busiest days of the week. No commercial entity would ever think of closing for the whole day for training. Strangely enough, I never saw any hairdressers, eateries, banks, etc., closed for training as I walked down the busy shopping centre. I had even checked the library's website immediately before I left to see if books I had ordered were available, and there was no indication of it being closed. I had wasted petrol and parking, as doubtless many others had, or incurred public transport costs. This is yet another example of the disparity between the private and public sectors. A name and address has been supplied.
Why no mention of special constables, writes Harry Verney, who is a councillor of Cheriton and Bishop Sutton. Sir, it was surprising to me that in the recent debate among the potential police commissioners at Winchester University, no one mentioned the special constables. Yet they provide a good backup to the regular force. Hampshire has 583 specials, an increase of 71 over last year. They are inexpensive and effective way of boosting the police presence, particularly at busy times. I spent 31 years as a special in London and found the experience very worthwhile and a good change from my normal job. I learnt useful skills such as life-saving, first aid. I worked actively in specialist units with my last 14 years at Heathrow. I urge young adults to join here or in London, where numbers are proportionately less and the chance to stop crime off duty is very great. Twice in 24 hours, I stopped tourists being fleeced in Oxford Street by the three-card trick. That's from Harry Verney, a councillor of Cheriton and Bishop Sutton, Brandymount, Cheriton.
Buses that turn up late or not at all, writes Anne Jones of Kingsworthy. Sir, I note with interest a call to increase parking fees within Winchester City, Chronicle, November the 22nd. I'm sure we would all be happier with this proposal if the buses were more reliable. For the past four Fridays, the afternoon buses from Kingsworthy have been late or not even turned up. A suggestion has been made that instead of 20-minute intervals, the timetable is changed to 30 minutes. Indeed, a young mother and I saw two buses come together before we could reach the stop, presumably late for the previous schedule. We then waited for an hour before a bus arrived on the opposite side of the road, needing to travel around the Kingsworthy circuit before reaching the mother and myself. We both decided to go home, as a 30-minute timetable still would not have produced a bus on time. All sorts of excuses are made. Roadworks, Christmas traffic. Goodness knows what will happen if and when a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit occurs in Kingsworthy. One bus a day, I presume. Bring back the inspectors and more monitoring instead of constant meetings and no action. That is from Anne Jones, Falmer Drive, Kingsworthy.
Enough, enough is enough. The post office has priced me out. So writes Alex Fife of Harestock Road, Winchester. Sir, another small nail in Royal Mail's coffin was hammered in this week when my wife and I visited the post office to send off some overseas Christmas cards. Admittedly, they were airmail to some far-flung destinations, but I could not believe my ears when we were told that postage for each card was £2.38. Little wonder people are finding alternative means of wishing the season's greetings to friends overseas and also at home. I heard that Royal Mail depends heavily on the income from junk mail. How long will it be before the companies that generate it realise that most goes straight into the waste bin and find more cost-effective ways of promoting their wares? Then where will Royal Mail turn? I will certainly think twice before I next visit my post office. They have priced me out. Alex Fife, Harestock Road, Winchester.
A letter now from Mrs. Anne Gildersleeve. Leave River Park where it is, please. May I belatedly comment on your front page article of the Chronicle of November 15th about Fit for the Future's campaign for improved sports facilities in Winchester. I quite understand the athletic and sports community wanting more facilities, but I should like to put in a plea to keep River Park Leisure Centre where it is. I swim and take part in Keep Fit sessions there regularly, and it is so conveniently situated near the centre of the city. I can cycle from St Cross, but it's easily accessible by bus from all the villages outside Winchester. It's in a lovely situation, with playing fields close by. I'm concerned that any new centre will be outside Winchester, and I shall end up having to drive there. Please keep River Park open, even if new facilities are created elsewhere. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross.
And that concludes the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Jane.
200 years ago, 1812. The courage of a young woman who substituted herself for her brother, a conscript in 1806, and who has just returned from the army, is the subject of much conversation here. The story is true and deserves to be known. Virginia Chesquier of Delamont near Lille, finding her brother was not in a condition to support the fatigues of the war, obtained from her parents leave to depart for him. They were twins and much resembled each other. She presented herself at the depot in his clothes and was sent to the 27th Regiment, serving 6 years. She was raised to sergeant at the Battle of Wagram for having saved the life of her captain, who fell into the Danube. At the Battle of the 2nd of May near Lisbon, her colonel surrounded by the enemy, she demanded 6 dependable men, with whom she proceeded to his succour. Notwithstanding a wound in her left arm, she succeeded in saving him, besides making 2 insurgent officers prisoners.
So 100 years ago, 1912, a seasonal bit. Some time ago, the Evening News in London announced that a Santa Claus Association would be formed. Dolls would be purchased and dressed and distributed at Christmas time among the children in the poorer parts of London. The idea was taken up by all classes of society, Queen Alexandra giving it her cordial support. In Chilbolton, a class was formed by Mrs. Wallace of Church Farm, and the members have been busily engaged in the dressing of dolls for some weeks. The other item is, it makes it absolutely clear about our monetary system. The only currency in England in Norman times was the silver penny, and the pound was a term of account meaning 240 of them. The reckoning was based on weight. 20 pennyweights make an ounce. 12 ounces make a pound. But in money, the values of the intermediate stages, as they became settled, were inverted. So that in the 12th century, as now, or was in 100 years ago, 12 pennies make a shilling and 20 shillings a pound.
Nearer our time, 50 years ago, 1962. Two hutted camps are to be set up by the County Council as a first step in a plan to ameliorate the living conditions of gypsy families. They will cost £15,000 each, and with a resident warden and social worker, the aim is that they should be a halfway house towards eventually rehabilitating gypsies into the community. There are 157 gypsy families in the county, of whom 119 are static, mainly in New Forest compounds, and 38 nomadic. And the second item, for the 200 who packed Church Hall, Whitchurch, on Monday evening, the future of their town was on trial for the second time in a year. It was a further campaign to prevent the orderly decay of the community, with its empty shops and drift of working population. Last November, the town protested at refusal to allow a chalk factory at Beer Hill. And now the County Council is under fire for quashing another application for development of broiler equipment works.
So a couple of items from just 25 years ago, 1987. More than 500,000 trees in Hampshire were destroyed by last month's severe storms. Already, applications for aid to replace trees has topped £2 million. But the County Council only has £204,000 in its coffers to instigate the massive programme of replacement, with £120,000 of that coming in grants from central government and the Countryside Commission. Another item is Mrs. Monica Woodhouse, joint proprietor of the Hampshire Chronicle and one of the most respected provincial newspaper editors in the country, died at her home on Monday, aged 76. Then Mrs. Monica Stroud, she joined the Chronicle in 1936, having served her apprenticeship with the London General Press. Her father, Arthur Stroud, had become sole proprietor when his partner Herbert Johnson died, and soon after he invited his daughter to join him. On her father's death in 1950, she became chairman as well as editor.
And now we have Chronicle comment, followed by first person. So, Jane, the editorial comment, yes.
The editorial comment this week is leading the way in Christmas markets. On the face of it, the spat between the cathedral cities of Winchester and Salisbury over their Christmas market advertising campaigns is little more than a storm in a teacup. Last year, Winchester business chiefs decided to place an advertisement on a billboard in Wiltshire's county town to entice folk here to its festive market. Now Salisbury has hit back, having at last decided to stage its own Christmas market, and is trying to lure the people of Winchester with its own billboard in Stockbridge Road near the railway station. What this friendly rivalry does show, however, is that by turning the tables on Winchester, Salisbury has acknowledged just how good Winchester is at marketing itself. Not only has England's ancient capital been staging the market and ice rink for some 6 years now, but it has also rented 25 billboards in London, including at Waterloo Station, to lure Londoners here. Winchester's market and ice rink has been a massive economic success for city, shops, pubs and restaurants. So, Winchester should be crowing that another fine cathedral city is looking across the border to see how it's done. After all, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so they say.
Our first person this week is written by Khalid Aziz, and he entitles it with a question, St Swithin's for Malala. At varying times during my formative years, I have been brought up in both the Christian and Islamic traditions. Has it left me confused? I don't think so. Disappointed? Yes. The eruptions in Gaza and Israel set me wondering just how far any of us are from such conflicts, even in our relatively civilised society. My double religious upbringing has convinced me that, at international level, theocracies are more trouble than they are worth. I have no difficulty with those who assert that Britain has an essentially Christian tradition, but would have problems if our new Archbishop of Canterbury turned into some kind of Ayatollah, notwithstanding his early career as an oil executive. It's unlikely, as he'll have his work cut out sorting out the currently fractious Church of England's burning issues of gay marriage and woman bishops. Currently reading Wolf Hall, Hilary Mantel's Booker Prize winner, set in an England riven by Henry VIII's twists and turns as he attempts to swap a wife who has failed to provide him with a male heir for a younger model with better prospects. One is struck by how religion, when allowed full rein, can hobble the temporal world. 500 years on, our new Bishop of Winchester, Tim Dakin, inherits a different world to his predecessors, Cardinal Wolsey and Stephen Gardiner. But as prelate to the Order of the Garter, he doubtless has the ear of the sovereign, but only from time to time. In Britain, we have learnt to leave most religion in church and content ourselves with personal manifestation of private belief. Other parts of the world have yet to learn this lesson. And so it is that the Israelis and Palestinians go at it with rockets, careless of how their zealotry makes mockery of their allegedly deeply held religious beliefs. In Afghanistan, the Taliban will no doubt succeed once we and our allies have withdrawn, sick of fighting for nothing. A mixture of fallacious religious interpretation and tribalism will consign the Afghan people to the Stone Age, where W famously wanted to bomb them. But it's not all gloom on the Islamic front. In Pakistan, the godless bigot who shot Malala Yousafzai for having the temerity of being a mere girl wanting an education has created a backlash of indignation amongst right-thinking people. We can feel justly proud that it is one of our hospitals and our doctors who are restoring her to her rightful health. I hope St Swithin's offers her a place. And if the governors cannot run to a bursary, I will lead a campaign to raise the necessary funds. But Pakistan is a theocracy, and there is never a shortage of politicians who will play the religious card if it means getting a self-serving mitt on the reins of power. Better the way it is in Britain, even if it does mean our churches are empty.
Belgarum is back in the paper this week with an alternative look at the news. In fact, six little slices. So over to Bobby, please, for the first slice.
And his first slice, headed, "They are bowled over." What's in the name? City councillors have been discussing the possibility of development in the area around Winchester train station. It seems all those car parks, the TA base, register office, are being eyed by developers, the town forum was told. One wraparound name mentioned was Carfax Bowl, combining the hotel that used to stand on the crossroads with the fact that it's in a dip. Councillor Martin Todd had a few ideas. If a name of a long-standing hostelry was needed, what about Gladstone Arms Bowl? Or, for a current landmark, Albion Bowl? Then, of course, there's always the more prosaic but undeniably functional Station Bowl. Last year, Winchester Business Improvement District was promoting the Stockbridge Andover Roads area as Hyde Vale. Belgarum is open to any reader suggestions.
And this one is entitled Break Out the Bubbly. Penyards Country Properties are celebrating winning a prestigious National Press Advertising Award for 2012. The awards dinner is held at the RAF Club in London's Piccadilly and is the high point of the year for the UK's leading independent estate agents. Firms from across the UK and overseas met at the dinner, and once again competition for the top awards was fierce. Kimberly Elliott, marketing director at the Winchester Estate Agent, which also has branches across Hampshire, said, "We are thrilled to have received this award. It represents a terrific team effort across the whole company, and we are more than delighted to have come out top against some of the strongest and most influential firms in the country." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Kimberly Elliott receiving the award from Annette Reeve, the director of Penyard's Mayfair office.
And this one's called Peter Tickles Taste Buds, and there's a small picture of said Peter. A wine, cheese and charcuterie tasting evening at Abbey House, the Mayor of Winchester's official residence, raised £1,504 for the Magic Wand Appeal for the Children's Unit at RHCH. The evening was hosted by Peter Richards, the BBC's Saturday Kitchen wine expert and a local parent with children born at RHCH. 40 guests enjoyed local Leyburn and Loosehanger Farm cheeses, hand-carved Iberico ham, Parmigiano and salami brought from Milan, with local Jude's ice cream and Maison Blanc's macaroons to finish. The Winchester Holiday Inn's pastry chef baked artisan breads, especially for the evening. Peter matched these with a variety of wines, ranging from £3.99 to £28.99 a bottle, selected from Sainsbury's Badger Farm and local boutique wine store, The Twisted Vine. If you would like to run an event for the Magic Wand Appeal, or just help out, call 01962 825 377. That's 01962 825 377. Or email Nikki, that's N-I-K-K-I, Nikki.Oliver at hhft.nhs.uk. To donate, visit www.magicwandappeal.org.
And Belgarum continues, the tough task for judges. Not like the Leveson inquiry, though. Meon Valley children have won a trip to London in George Hollingbury's annual Christmas card competition. Hundreds of entries from 8 schools in the MP's constituency competed for the prize, and the number of categories was extended from 3 to 4. Georgie King, aged 7, of Usbury Primary School, won the infant category with a jolly reindeer, while Izzy Corns, aged 11, of Cheriton Primary, won the junior prize for her nativity display. Lara Brent, aged 12, of Swanmore College of Technology, won the secondary school prize for her snowflake design. And Lucy Stokes, aged 13, of Rachel Maddox School, won the special school prize for her picture of robins. Mr. Hollingbury said, "Everyone in the office was blown away yet again by the quality of all the entries. Without a doubt, there are some very talented children in the Meon Valley. And I thank all for entering and congratulate the winners for their fantastic efforts. And the winners also have a chance of their design going to the Prime Minister."
And this is a sad story with a happy ending. It's a sad tale that looks like it will end happily. The RSPCA is appealing for information after 4 kittens were abandoned in Hursley 3 weeks ago. Belgarum hears they were alerted after a member of the public found the kittens next to a parking area on the edge of the wood behind her property. Alert but scared, they were taken to the RSPCA Stubbington Ark Animals Shelter near Fareham, where a vet found them to be underweight and with fleas. They have now all been found homes, conditional on checks. Now the RSPCA is appealing for information in a bid to find the person responsible for the kittens. Inspector Jan Edwards said, "It is a sad day when people fail their pet by not having it neutered, and then when kittens come along, they just shrug their shoulders and decide to dump them and let someone else deal with it. Animal centres are full of unwanted cats and kittens, and owners are only making the problem worse by letting them breed." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the 4 little kittens looking up appealingly at the photographer.
And this one is headed, "It's a sign of the times." And the signs in question are in a little photograph lying flat on the ground. "We all know Hampshire County Council has been tightening its belt, but perhaps it needs to increase the budget for road signs. This one, as shown, in New Cheriton, was so corroded that the wind, or possibly a vandal, appears to have had no trouble in pushing it over. If anyone's car was so rusty, it would fail its MOT and incur a hefty fine. The Hinton Arms, too, will want it repaired, PDQ, as passing motorists will be hard-pressed to read the sign at the moment." And there they are, flat on the ground, and it says underneath, "A farewell to arms. The pub sign was also a victim when the larger road sign gave up the ghost."
And now we continue with the general items of general news. And so over to Bobby.
Right. Recession blamed as an auction house closes. An Alsford auction house looks set to collapse into receivership, its manager has told the Hampshire Chronicle. Prospect Auction Rooms looks to have ceased trading, owing money to a number of people or holding their unsold goods in its building. Auctions due to have been held on November the 10th and the 24th were cancelled. Around 6 members of staff have been made redundant, said Charles Evans, its manager. And Mr. Evans said, "What's happening? It's just about to go into receivership. I feel absolutely sick about it. But it's not my fault. Look at the state the country's in. We're not the only business to close up." Mr. Evans blamed the recession and fewer house sales. "Stuff to sell is not coming into the business," he said. "Why has it dropped off? I don't know. People aren't dying. People aren't moving house." He said he was unaware of how much money he owed to customers. "I'll have to sit down with my accountant. I'm trying to pay people off. If I had the money, I would do." Mr. Evans also blamed the nearby competitor, Andrew Smith and Son, based at Itchen Stoke, moving into general sales auctions several months ago. "This has put me under so much stress, it's unbelievable. I've tried my hardest to keep the place going. I'm so sorry it hasn't worked out. But it's not my fault that receivers will have to come in." But Mr. Evans said that customers who had left goods to be sold would be able to retrieve their possessions. "People will be able to go and get their stuff. A note will be left on the gate with a date for people to come. It will be before the receivers go in." One angry customer was Joan Davis of Fleming Road, Week. Her 75-piece Royal Worcester china collection sold at auction at Prospect in September for £190. But she's yet to see her money. Mrs. Davies said, "It's not good. They've never given me any information. It's very poor. And the money was going to help go towards Christmas. But what can you do about it?" The business opened in Prospect Road in 2009.
And this is entitled, "It Can Only Get Worse," say resigned residents. They say it can take up to an hour to leave their street when traffic is heavy. But residents in Oliver's Battery claim their problems will worsen if neighbouring St Peter's Catholic Primary School is expanded. The school is set to increase pupil numbers from 315 to 420 in County Council proposals to address a Hampshire-wide places shortfall. Residents in Oliver's Battery Road North and Fairfax Close argue that this will increase traffic congestion. Stanley Jackson of Oliver's Battery Road North said, "We all appreciate there's a shortage of places and something has to be done about that. But our problem is the Roman Catholic school has parents driving from across the county and there's a heck of a lot of vehicles driving down our very narrow road." The vast majority of residents agree on this. "It can take almost an hour to get out, and there are nearly 60 cars down here. It's a disaster." Mr. Jackson, 63, a retired chartered accountant, said he spoke to the school and the county council at a consultation drop-in last Wednesday, November the 14th, but was pessimistic about their chances of reducing the traffic. He said, "I felt our concerns fell on deaf ears. No one here objects to the school expanding, but the council's priority should be looking elsewhere to meet the need. We do try to have a good relationship with the school, as we all live in one community. They do try to mitigate the problem by operating school buses and encouraging parents to park in Ridgeway or Killam Lane, but it only scratches the surface." But Sue Broadbent, Chairman of Governors at St Peter's, said the school was working with both city and county councils to resolve problems. She said the school was discussing 4 plans to reduce traffic: redesigning the junction of Oliver's Battery Road North with Stanmore Lane, building a pedestrian path to the school from the planned park and ride at Pitt Manor, increasing the number of minibuses, and encouraging parents to use other car parks like Badger Farm Sainsbury's. The County Council said it was working to resolve the issues but was unavailable for further comment. The consultation ends on December the 5th with a final decision likely early next year. Councillor Roy Perry, Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, said traffic management was discussed at an information evening recently held at St Peter's School, and we do understand the concerns residents have and will seek to address them. County transport officers are already looking at measures which will help to mitigate against the impact of parents dropping off and picking up pupils at the start and end of the school day, which residents living near to St Peter's School experience. And it is accompanied by a photograph of Stanley Jackson with other residents from Oliver's Battery Road North having a previous problem in April with the junction with that road and Stanmore Lane.
I have a mandate, insists the police chief in lowest poll, and there is a very small photograph of said police chief. The newly elected Police and Crime Commissioner has insisted he has the mandate of the people, despite the worst turnout for any poll in Hampshire's history. Just 1 in 10 people in parts of Hampshire voted for triumphant independent candidate Simon Hayes, who blamed poor government publicity and the winter timing of the poll. He said, "I think it's disappointing and disturbing that people were not aware of the election taking place and were not aware of the influence of the roll. There is now a great responsibility to show those who did not vote that the role of the Police and Crime Commissioner has value to them." Mr. Hayes said his main mission when he started work last week will be to reduce Hampshire's high reoffending rate, which is currently 75%. The turnout was even worse than the pessimistic predictions on the eve of the election, which had forecast that fewer than 1 in 5 people would cast their vote. The Electoral Commission described the national turnout of 15% as a concern for everyone who cares about democracy. The highest turnout in Hampshire was in Winchester, with 20.2%. Elsewhere, Test Valley clocked up a 17.9% turnout and the New Forest managed 16.3%. Just 16.2% of Eastleigh residents cast their vote, whilst Fareham saw a turnout of 14.7%. But such areas as Gosport saw as few as 11% turning out. Only 13% of people in Southampton voted. Mr. Hayes, who is now the chairman of Crime Stoppers Hampshire and Isle of Wight, is a former chairman of Hampshire Police Authority and also an ex-Tory leader of New Forest District Council. During the campaign, he defended himself against accusations he had only left the party in 2011 and not in 2006, as he had said. Mr. Hayes said he was a true independent with no support from the party. He said, "When we started this, we had no real anticipation that we would get this far, but we thought it was important to give the electors of Hampshire a chance to vote for an independent candidate. He beat Conservative candidate Michael Mates by about 15,000 votes."
Work starts on the city's first council homes since the 80s. The site of Winchester's first new council houses since the 1980s has been officially opened. Housing chiefs, volunteer groups and residents were in Mitchell-Dever to mark the occasion last Thursday. The development is the work of the Winchester Housing Trust, whose aim is to increase affordable housing for local people throughout the district. The Trust's chief executive, Leanne Smith, said, It takes a lot to get something like this off the ground in this economic climate. We've done it through tenacity and knocking on every door. 5 of the 15 units have been earmarked for ownership by the City Council, which will rent them to local families as part of its new homes delivery programme. In a statement, a spokesman for the Trust said, "These houses will be the first new council houses to be built since the 1980s and will be a vital asset to local people currently on the housing register." Councillor Ian Tate, the city's portfolio holder for new homes delivery, said, "There's been a tremendous support for this, and the sooner we can get it started and people can start living there, the better. There was a little bit of objection, but I think the parish council has been sterling in highlighting the benefits to the community." The site opening just behind Deva Close was attended by around 50 people, including the Winchester and Llangersford MP, Stephen Bryan. Also in attendance was Brian Barron, the Trust's former chief executive. In honour of the 20 years that Mr. Barron spent working on affordable housing in the district, the new development is to be named Barron's Close. And Mr. Barron said, "It's very surprising. I certainly didn't anticipate it, but yes, it's an honour." The homes will only be made available to those with a local connection, and it is hoped the development will be completed by December next year. And the Hampshire Chronicle reported last year that 42 families with links to Micheldever had applied for housing in the village. And accompanying this is a photograph of the group of the Trusts and the well-wishers and Steve Bryan and Mr. Barron and Leanne Smith, all looking very happy about the prospect of these new houses. And a smaller photograph of Mr. Barron himself doing the honours by cutting the tape.
And this one is entitled "Sally's Plan for Yacht Bow Runs Aground." It might strike some people as an unusual bit of shopping, but one Winchester woman is now the proud owner of the broken remains of a yacht. Not just any yacht, but the bow of the former Prime Minister Sir Edward Heath's Morning Cloud III. Sally Tattersall bought the huge piece of mahogany for £103.57 on an auction website, despite the misgivings of her husband, and it now occupies the driveway of her home in Marwell, near Colden Common. Mrs. Tattersall was inspired to make the purchase by a visit to Sir Edward's former home, Arundel's, in Salisbury's Cathedral Close. However, her plans to donate it to the charity which runs Arundel's have been scuppered after the trustees decided to close the house as it was not attracting enough visitors to make it financially viable. Mrs. Tattersall, 49, said, "It's such a shame, really. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I probably would have donated it, but it looks as if the house is going to close now. I think it's quirky and historic." The third of 5 racing yachts named Morning Cloud by the late politician, it met its end in a tragic circumstance, sinking in the Solent and claiming 2 of its crew members, including Sir Edward's godson. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Sally with the bow of the ship the bow of the boat standing upright in her drive, and a photograph of Sir Edward Heath, and also a photograph of the boat when it was in its full glory sailing on the Solent.
Crackdown on rowdy yobs in city suburb. Perhaps it's fortunate there are no photographs. Police in Stanmore will get extra powers in response to a drastic rise in antisocial behaviour. Residents say thuggish behaviour has become much worse in the Winchester suburb, and a Section 30 dispersal order has now been granted, allowing police to eject troublemakers from the vicinity of Wavell Way. The move follows a slew of incidents, including an attempted robbery of a convenience store earlier this month, for which one man has been charged. Anyone failing to comply with the order could face up to 3 months in prison or a fine of up to £5,000. Matthew Ball, aged 25, lives on Wavell Way, but says the area is no longer a suitable place to raise his young family. He said, "I'm trying to bring up 2 kids, but we're staying at my partner's parents' house when we can. Since the end of July, it's been a problem. I was sent home from work the other day because I was so tired when I'd been kept up by the kids outside." Another man, who asked not to be named, said, "It's been going on for about the last 6 months. It's now getting out of hand." Sergeant Matt Fansett of the Winchester Safer Neighbourhoods team said, "We have worked closely with our partners at Winchester City Council to put this order in place and to reduce the antisocial behaviour. This order gives us an additional option to deal with those causing problems in this area." Officers received 18 reports of ASB in the area in October and a further 14 reports between November the 1st and November the 24th, compared to 7 reports in September, 10 in August, and just 3 in July. The order covers Wavell Way between Fox Lane and Stanmore Lane, Stanmore Lane between Eversley Place and Selborne Place, Summers Close, and the alleyway between Stanmore Lane and the Recreation Ground. It will come into force at 12:01 a.m. this Saturday, December the 1st, expiring at 11:59 p.m. on May the 14th, 2013. The new powers will also mean that between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m, anyone under the age of 16 not accompanied by a parent or guardian can be returned home.
Lanterns light up the city's Christmas offerings. Winchester laid its stall as the Christmas capital of England with the return of the festive market and ice rink. The Cathedral Close was packed with revellers last Thursday as the Dean of the Cathedral and the Mayor of Winchester officially opened them to the public. The lantern procession, which has already become a firm fixture in the city's Yuletide calendar, arrived in the Close at 6:30 p.m, but not without a struggle. An extremely blustery evening meant that only by a miracle of Christmas did participants manage to keep hold of the lovingly crafted lamps. Japanese drummers wowed onlookers at the start of the opening ceremony, accompanied by some pyrotechnics. The market is bigger than ever, with around 100 traditional wooden stalls offering everything from mulled wine to soap, jewellery and cakes. Modelled on the original European markets and now in its 7th year, it attracts in excess of 300,000 visitors annually and has become an attraction in its own right. And the Alpine-style cafe proved an excellent spot to watch the stars of Dancing on Ice, Vicky Ogden, Katie Stainsby and Andrei Lipanov. June Smith of Week said, "Oh, my husband and I love Dancing on Ice, so we wanted to come down to the market just, and it really feels just like Christmas." Before blessing the Christmas tree, the very Reverend James Atwell said, This is now a significant community event and an important cooperation between the cathedral and the city. And Mayor Frank Pearson officially opened the market at 7 p.m. and also read the Christmas story from the Gospel according to St. Luke. Winchester signed off its claim to the title of Christmas Capital by filling the cathedral close with a crackle and glow of fireworks. And as you can imagine, there are several very, very colourful pictures accompanying that article of all types and colours and sizes of lanterns. One looks like a gingerbread man. There's a very colourful figure, I'll call him, in purple and turquoise trousers and orange boots. And he looks to have, oh, I think it's Uncle Bulgaria from the Wombles. He's certainly got a snout. And there's a soldier. And there's a Father Christmas. And there's a snowman. And a funny-looking dwarf with very big ears. And in the middle, having mentioned the fire and ice dancing, there is Vicky Ogden, one of the stars of Dancing on Ice, dancing in a rather attractive red leotard and waving two flaming torches. Hope she didn't drop them.
And this is an article about workshops to help prevent elderly falls. Winchester will host a workshop on helping older people avoid dangerous falls. Hampshire County Council's Older Persons Wellbeing Team, along with Southern Health NIH Foundation Trust, will provide information and guidance on how to teach older people exercises which improve balance and prevent falls. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Adult Social Care, Councillor Felicity Hinson, said, "Experiencing a fall can be an enormous setback for older people, so we are dedicated to helping older people stay as independent and live in their own homes as long as possible." The workshops are aimed at staff or volunteers working within community groups, day centres and sheltered housing schemes, and are free for voluntary and community organisations. Each organisation that attends will receive a training pack, including exercise leaflets, DVDs of the exercises, and a CD of music. The course will be held at Falcon House in Monarch Way, Winchester, on January the 17th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. There will also be a workshop on January the 30th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Crossfield Hall in Romsey.
There's a picture of a group of unhappy parents and students at a bus stop in Otterbourne. They say bus service is not the ticket. And the service in question is the number one. And there is a small inset photograph of the front of a service number one from Southampton. Angry parents say an unreliable bus service is harming their youngsters' education. Parents of students at Winchester's Peter Simmons College say they are often late for lectures because the Blue Star number one regularly fails to stop in the morning. The service runs from Southampton through Chandler's Ford and Otterbourne and on to Winchester. Louise Holly, whose daughter Ruby uses the bus to get to college, said, "This service either doesn't turn up at all, or it goes straight past groups of waiting passengers because it's either too full or late. Blue Star must be making an absolute fortune out of this route. The fares are astronomical anyway, and it is in fact cheaper to take the train." Parents say the problem is not a new one, and they are unable to get a satisfactory response from Blue Star. Jane Benny of Chapel Lane has a 16-year-old son, Joe, who uses this service. He takes the bus from the stop at Otterbourne. Mrs. Benny said, "Joe's my third child going to Peter Simmons, and we had problems with the buses with the first two as well, but it's now become intolerable." I've been trying to contact Blue Star for weeks, and so have the school, but no one gets back to you. Mark Keithley, Blue Star commercial manager, said bus times would be changed to get students to college earlier. He said, "We have been aware of a significant increase in usage, and we are working on a solution. From January, we will amend departure times and give more space between buses, which will give children a choice of two services to get them there on time or even earlier. We don't feel we have let anyone down because we've been running our advertised service, and there is always a choice to leave on an earlier bus. Everybody wants to travel at the same time. The changes will take effect from January the 20th, Mr. Keithley added.
A welcome home for troops. Hundreds of soldiers will be given a royal welcome home in Winchester next week after serving in Afghanistan. Around 300 soldiers from the King's Royal Hussars, the county's cavalry regiment, will march through Winchester city centre on Monday, December the 3rd, after completing a successful six-month operation in Helmand Province. Prince Michael of Kent, the Queen's cousin and regimental senior colonel, will greet the returning heroes alongside Major General John Friedberger and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan. The Band of the Rifles will lead the parade from the Great Hall at 1:52 p.m., marching to the Cathedral for a service of thanksgiving and carols conducted by the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, and featuring the Salisbury Plain Military Wives Choir. Lieutenant Colonel Alex Potts, commanding officer of the Hussars, said, "The homecoming parade provides a wonderful opportunity for the regiment to thank the people of Winchester, and indeed the whole county of Hampshire, for their continued support, especially through the difficult times whilst on operations in Afghanistan. It's always a great pleasure and privilege to return to Winchester to reinforce our strong bond with its people. And this will be the regiment's first return to the city since a freedom parade in 2006.
And this is about a Christmas fair at the ex-home of Davy. A Christmas fair is being held at the Hampshire family home of the late Davy Jones this weekend. The Monkees' lead singer, who is pictured with the article in his later days rather than as the young singer we remember, died in February. But his daughter Annabel is opening Grenville Hall in Droxford to the public for the fair on Sunday, December the 2nd. Davy Jones used to live in Droxford before moving to a ranch in Florida where he died of a heart attack. There will be several stalls including toys, crafts and jewellery, as well as vintage clothing and clothes from local designers Tracy Evans, Gervoise Jackets and Adrian Honey Knitwear, which have all been featured in international magazines. Entertainment is provided by the Hampshire Youth Brass Band and singer Charlotte Clark, who has become an internet sensation after having more than 1 million hits on YouTube. Annabel said, "A lot of love and thought has gone into creating something that showcases the best of Hampshire, and we are over the moon to have the Hampshire Youth Brass Band, as youth arts is something my dad was so passionate about." The fair runs from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, and entry is free. Refreshments are available throughout.
One of Britain's biggest environmental groups has hit out at Hampshire County Council's proposal to ban wind farms on its land. Representatives from Friends of the Earth, FOE, spoke out after gathering in the New Forest to show their support for wind power and other forms of renewable energy. The County Council says it recognises the benefits of wind farms, but claims the huge turbines are a blot on the landscape. As reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, Councillor Keith House, leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group on the Tory-run authority, has described the proposed ban as simply bonkers. Now, FOE has joined the debate, staging a protest at which members from across Hampshire brandishing cards spelling out the words Clean British Energy. Penny Russell, the organisation's coordinator in the New Forest, said energy from free resources such as the wind and sun is crucial to our energy supply. It's clean, renewable and environmentally friendly. We were really shocked to see that Hampshire County Council is considering ruling out wind power on its land. We thought the council was committed to helping reduce climate change. Renewable energy projects should be considered on a case-by-case basis.
Sticky end for award hopes. Winchester High Street has missed out on a prestigious design award, with chewing gum blamed as the possible cause. The street was nominated in the 2012 Solent Design Awards for the £2.2 million repaving work that was done in 2010, but it lost to Forest Park School Totten for the Quality Place Overall Award and to Sunfield Close Development in Andover for the Quality Place Award. The Sea City Museum in Southampton won the People's Choice Award. Speaking at a cabinet meeting last week, the City Council leader Keith Wood said, "We were very pleased to see the High Street shortlisted for the award, and it reflected a great deal of credit on our officers, Andy Hickman and his team. I think it was a great achievement, and looking at the type of development they were looking at, it was exceptional that a high street was nominated at all." But Councillor Roger Huckstep, portfolio holder for environment, added the street has a chewing gum problem. He said, "The beautifully paved high street is strewn with chewing gum yet again, and I hope that did not affect the judge's decision. It really has a massive impact visually and is a great shame." Councillor Robert Humby, the deputy leader, said plans were in place to remove the gum. And he said, "This was discussed at the last Business Improvement District meeting and cleaning is being planned. But there are issues with the type of machines they can use. The conversation is going on with the County Council at the moment."
And this is entitled Affordable Homes Get Go-Ahead. 25 affordable homes are to be built in Kingsworthy, despite concerns of residents. On Tuesday, city councillors voted unanimously in favour of the proposals for Hookpit Farm Lane. The development has twice before been approved by planning chiefs, but the plans came before the council's committee after some 30 letters of objection were received. Prior to the meeting, Kingsworthy Parish Council said that residents' concerns included a loss of parking spaces and levels of traffic at the junctions of Hookpit Farm Lane with Cundle Way and Springvale Road. Objecting to the application, resident James Hunt said, "It's already a well-populated area, and in recent years there's been an increase in traffic. This proposal is unworkable and unrealistic." A report submitted by housing officers said there are 207 householders in need of rented accommodation with a local connection to Kingsworthy, and that the need cannot be satisfied purely within the immediate area as it currently stands. It was also noted that whilst Barton Farm will provide around 800 affordable homes, these will be available to all 3,200 households currently on the city's waiting list.
And that concludes the extracts for this week.
Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Ken Clemenson and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and tape preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Bobby Sanderson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you and goodbye.